This is University Beats. I'm Mark Schreiner. Walking outside the University of South Florida Research Park in Tampa, you'll come across a covered walkway outside the USF Connect building. On the pillars of that walkway are plaques featuring the first 20 members of the Florida Inventors Hall of Fame. They'll be adding 8 more inductees, who collectively hold more than 260 U.S. patents this year. I sat down with one of those inductees, USF Professor of Electrical Engineering, Richard Gitlin. We talked about the work he's being honored for, but first, I asked what it felt like when he got word of his induction.
Well, it was a bunch of emotions. I was very, very honored, and it's also very humbling, but I'm really thrilled to have it. And one thing I like about honors, they can't take them away, you always have them.
Now, I'm going to take a deep breath here because you're being honored for your innovative research and development in digital communications, broadband networking, and wireless systems. You're co-inventor of something people probably recognize, DSL, Digital Subscriber Line, which allows internet access over telephone networks. And yet you're still inventing. There's a miniature videoscope for minimally invasive surgery you're working on, and also a wearable compact cardiogram machine to predict heart attacks. All that work. Is there one that you're proudest of?
So I've had basically two phases of my career. I spent 32 years at Bell Labs, and the DSL work was done at Bell Labs. And like many inventions, it was out of necessity. I was in charge of the development of the old modems, the ones when you would dial up in here, that was weird sounds. But we knew theoretically we were reaching the limit of what you could do with that technology. And I got two or three people, and we sat down and realized that the native capability of the loop was megabits. We did first calculation. There was a eureka moment. We filed a patent. But then what I often say, and there's a very big distinction between invention. So I have 60 inventions, 60 patents, but I have a very small number of innovations. So by innovations, DSL is an innovation, something that changes the way we work, think, play, and do. My second part of my career began when I came to USF. And again, I've been driven by necessity. I had a procedure with a Da Vinci robot on my kidney. It was a mechanical problem. And I realized that there were a lot of problems with it. And I got to speak to several people at the medical school, dean of the medical school, dean of the School of Engineering. And they pointed me to a couple of faculty members who were very interested in this concept. Lo and behold, we wrote a patent. The patent is basically taking a network that we would know how to build if it was outside your body, putting it in vivo inside your body. And it would be a distributed network in contrast to the Da Vinci robot, which was a centralized network. Now, so we formed a startup company, and we're still struggling to get to the innovation stage where we're capitalized to do it. And once I got associated with the medical school in Tampa General, opportunities started to present themselves. A cardiologist, Dr. Peter Febre, who's retired, showed me a technology, a vector cardiogram, invented maybe 80 years ago. And they realized that instead of the 12-lead electrocardiogram, you only needed 3 leads because it's a vector. Any vector can be described by 3 components. So he says, here it is, see what you can do with it. And so immediately I thought of, well, it's personalized medicine. In this case, we can do 2 things if we were successful. Make it very small. And in order to bring the leads very close together, your signals are not going to be as strong as if they were far apart. So we had to use a lot of signal processing technology. And very quickly, we got it to under 2 centimeters square, which is remarkable. So then the second thing, once we had that, we said, okay, wouldn't it be wonderful if you wear this all the time, and then you could use a word that's very common now, big data. We collected a lot of data on you. And then we run it, use a deep learning machine to try and predict if and when you're going to have an event. And this is very difficult because we don't have a lot of data, so we use some stored database. And my students and I just wrote a paper. They presented it in Orlando about 2 weeks ago, showing one of the most serious forms of atrial fibrillation, you could predict it a couple of minutes ahead. This is sort of startling. I'm proud of all of these. The latter two are inventions, not innovations. DSL is an innovation.
What advice do you have for students, as well as other aspiring inventors and innovators in that case?
One of the things that I think that I've been driven by is that children ask why, and you always try and get to the root cause of what the issue or opportunity is. Is it something that is scientifically limited? I mean, you know the laws of physics or what thermodynamics is, so you can't do this. Is it complexity limited? Or is it somewhere in between where it may be possible, but we just don't know what to do? So as you go through your education, you build up a toolkit of technology. And then when you see a problem, so the person who sees the glass is half empty, it's a problem. The one who can be an innovator sees it as half full, and we just got to fill up the rest of the glass. So be alert. Look at opportunities, and I like the saying, luck favors the prepared. I don't know. I never considered myself. One of my mentors, when he saw the article that was in the USF News, sent me a very nice email. He says, you know, Rich, when you were working for me, he told me when you were doing your doctorate, you weren't sure if you could be inventive. And when I look back at that time, I just was very limited in my exposure. But I look back as a child, I was always interested in how things work. Why do they not work? And that it's sort of intellectual curiosity. There's no formula. I mean, everybody would like to invent something big and, you know, and all that comes with it. But it's a question of intellectual curiosity, paying attention, being in the moment, looking at what's happening, thinking, I hate to use this phrase, thinking outside the box. But that's what inventors do, because in the box, you won't get a patent. So you have to think out of the box, but in a way that's rational and you can explain it to someone. And generally, I had my mother-in-law passed away recently. I was very close to her. And I told everyone, look, it's the mother-in-law test. If you cannot explain your idea and your solution in 3 minutes to your mother-in-law, she says, I understand it. Forget about it.
Absolutely true. You mentioned the idea there of when you were a student, you received the Thomas Edison Patent Award back in 2005. Now, your name is going to be on that Inventor's Walk of Fame, alongside Edison's, alongside Henry Ford, John Gorey, the father of air conditioning. Did you ever imagine in your wildest dreams that something like that could happen?
No. When I was a kid, all I wanted to do was play shortstop for the Brooklyn Dodgers. But I quickly realized that it was interesting because there was a fellow I played baseball with. His name is Rico Petrocelli, and he was clearly better than me in all dimensions, and he played for the Red Sox for 10 years. And then I realized, well, I'm really glad I'm also on the math team. He's not. So, you know, it's a question of I never thought that I would receive this recognition. In fact, the biggest invention, DSL, was done by necessity and driven by the fear of losing everything. I think a lot of people who were big inventors are driven by pressure. One of my friends, Andrew Viterbi, he was one of the founders of Qualcomm. And he's the inventor of the Viterbi algorithm, which most people in communications know is used for in many, many ways. And he discovered this because he was embarrassed that he didn't know how to teach something to his class, that he thought everybody didn't explain it precisely correctly. And there's a famous picture of him with his kids sitting around with him, and he's figuring out how to do this. And he had the eureka moment.
What's that eureka moment like for those of us who aren't inventors?
Well, often to me, when I was younger, it would happen during the night. And I used to have a notebook by the side of my bed, drive my wife crazy. But, then I would go into my office and write things down and then get it witnessed and understood. And when I got more senior, I immediately felt comfortable calling my friends up. I said, let's meet 7 in the morning in the labs. And it can happen when you're driving and you come to a stoplight and boom, my God, why didn't I think of that? What an idiot that I was looking at it the wrong way. And it's a moment of clarity. For me, it's a lot of by analogy. Something works here, and that's a great way to explain it to your mother-in-law, is an analogy. It's like this.
Well, Richard Gitlin, distinguished professor in USF's Department of Electrical Engineering, again, congratulations on the honor, and thank you for joining us on University Beat.
Thank you.
The 2017 class of the Florida Inventors Hall of Fame will be honored at a ceremony in Tampa on Friday, September 8th. For University Beat, I'm Mark Schreiner.